Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Casual Comics Cast. Hey Mark, how are you doing today?
Good, Joe. How are you?
Doing all right. It's been a while since we last chatted, and we were going to talk Across the Spider-Verse, the second installment in Sony's animated Miles Morales Spider-Man property, which we
Yes.
both saw in theaters.
Yes, we did. We absolutely did.
Big time. So we're going to talk that today. We're going to talk about a couple comic books we read, and as well as just maybe recap a little bit of Guardians of the Galaxy. So we got a Spider-Punk comic, we got a Guardians of the Galaxy comic tying on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. We really liked a lot, and I was like, let me see if I can find a comic book and see what's going on with Guardians in the comic world today. But let's start with some Spider-Man stuff. The trailer for Kraven the Hunter just dropped. And I know
Yes.
you're a big Kraven fan, right, Mark?
I am. I think arguably the best storyline in all of Spider-Man comic canon is called Kraven's Last Hunt in 1987. It crossed a couple of books. It started with Web of Spider-Man, and I looked it up, Joe. Web of Spider-Man 31 is
Okay.
where it first started, part one, Coffin. And
Was it
it
its own
is
series or was it just
no,
within
it's
the
just a
web of
six
Spider-Man?
within the web, but it also crossed into Amazing and I think Spectacular Spider-Man back then. So it's a six-part series. And I won't spoil it for anybody, but I highly recommend people go and read that six-part series. It basically Kraven is obsessed with Spider-Man and he actually becomes Spider-Man. So he fake kills Spider-Man and actually goes around and becomes him because he is obsessed with Spider-Man and ends up consuming him. It's a big controversial ending, which I've actually mentioned before on this podcast, so I won't spoil that. But it's a great series, and there's a lot of callbacks in this trailer alone to that
Oh, really?
story arc. Yeah. Yeah.
I did not read it. I'm going to go back and check it out. I think I might have some of those issues in a long box somewhere because I was collecting Web of Spider-Man back in the day. So this movie stars Aaron Taylor Johnson returned to the Marvel Universe, right? He was Quicksilver
I think
in one of the
so.
movies in the
Yeah,
Avengers,
yeah.
Age of Ultron.
I believe
And
so.
Russell Crowe, again, returned to the Marvel Universe. It was Zeus in Thor, Love and Thunder. That
Yep.
was an amazing turn of Zeus, by the way. I loved
It was really
it.
good.
But this movie looks like it's got a different tone. This is in the Sony universe. And so Sony's got the rights to the Spider-Man properties, but they're not crossing this over with Spider-Man, it doesn't look like. It looks like they're keeping it in sort of that darker Venom Morbius vein.
It looks like that. Yeah, I don't think they're going to do a Sinister Six movie, which is pinnacle in my opinion. But yeah, they're it's going to be dark there. I think as a Kraven fan, based on the trailer, the power set looks comic accurate. How he gets it is different, but the power set, he's basically in the comics, he has enhanced senses and strength based on
Where
an
does
herbal cocktail.
okay? So he's got
Herbal
like
cocktails.
it's not tea, it's not
No,
tea.
it's an herbal infusion, Joe.
Which I learned the difference at Spielbound, which was I was glad they educated me when I tried to order a tea
Yeah.
that there's no tea leaves in it.
There's not. But yeah, so he basically gets imbibed or imbued with the power through an herbal cocktail, which in the movies wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. So I'm like, it's fine. But yeah, it looks like his
This
power set's
origin,
pretty
though,
accurate.
the origin looks kind of like he's got it's like a Charlie Sheen. He's got like tiger blood, man. He's got
I know, but I think they might be leaving stuff out because I don't think it would just be tiger blood mixing with you know?
yeah, he gets
Maybe
attacked
who
by a
knows?
lion and then
Maybe
the
it's
blood drips in
radioactive
him.
tiger.
And was I seeing it in the trailer right? It looks like he can run on the walls. It's like
Yeah, I think there's gonna like he might have claws or something that he can kind of do that, but yeah, there's.
was that trailer accurate to him in the comics? So, because it looks like there's a lot of Russian maybe
Yep.
mafia
He
stuff.
he's he he's a Russian dude, although his dad, so Russell Crowe had a Russian accent, but I don't think he did. But he is Russian. So that's correct. He is from Russia. His dad's from Russia. Wealthy family, like that's all right. So they did a lot of good things there, and I caught two of the cameos, but I missed the second and fourth, third and fourth one, Joe.
Oh, really?
So I saw Calypso and Rhino.
Okay.
But I did not see, which was in the trailer. I had to go look it up. Chameleon and potentially Foreigner.
Foreigner, the band?
Yes. You're as cold as ice. No, it was. He's a very obscure Spider-Man villain.
And his power is he's from somewhere else.
For all the xenophobes out there. But yeah, so you had Chameleon, Calypso, Rhino, and potentially Foreigner. Because Foreigner is actually, Chameleon is Kraven's half-brother in the comics. So that's going to be, I think, a storyline
Yeah,
I think so.
Is that Dimitri, his brother?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And who's Calypso? I don't even know who Calypso is.
She is his love interest, Kraven's love interest. But she is not a good influence on him.
On who's already a villain.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess in the Spider-Man universe, though, he's more
of an anti-hero, but
he's just a hunter.
He's a hunter, but how he does things, the justice thing, it's very similar. It's like, hey, if you're evil, kind of like a Moon Knight thing, like he's out for justice kind of thing.
Okay.
But the problem is he's got mental problems and he's obsessed with Spider-Man, because in the comics, that scene that I was telling you, that's a callback, you know, the scene in the trailer with the spiders coming down.
Yep.
That's a very similar scene in the comics in the Kraven's Last Hunt, but he's eating the spiders in the comics. Really gross, like visceral image, but because he's trying to become Spider-Man, he's like, I'm going to eat all these spiders. And it's really kind of, you know, weird and crazy. So you see that and you're like, whoa, like that's just like in the comics. So they did a great job.
Now you're making me really want to read it. Maybe when the movie gets closer, you can reread it. I'll read it and I'll give you first impressions, because it sounds amazing the way you're describing it.
I will definitely reread it. I haven't probably read it in 15, 20 years. So I would, it came out in 1987.
Okay.
So it's been a bit, but it is a great storyline. And again, I read it in my adulthood after reading it when I was whatever, 15, 16, completely different point of view as you get older.
Right.
But yeah, so we should actually, Joe, that's a good point. Kraven's Last Hunt is the storyline.
All right. Check it out. Everybody. If you've got Marvel Unlimited app, you got a way to read them digitally. I don't know. You can find the individual issues probably collected somewhere. What did you think? A couple last thoughts on Kraven. What did you think about them? Rhino again, because Rhino's been in a Spider-Man movie before, and I get it, multiverse, they're all different places. Rhino in this milieu.
I don't know, I mean, he's not one of my favorite villains. I like the less brawny villains and more the brainy ones, and then that Kraven's kind of a mix of both. So I'm indifferent. What about you with Rhino? What do you think?
Rhino's interesting. I mean, it makes sense if you're going to have Kraven as the hunter, you know, to have like one of these giant game based villains, right? You don't want a man with Elephant Man. You might as well have him go with Rhino, which could be interesting. Like you said, the Rhino was never my favorite. It's like Rhino to me was almost even like Juggernaut. The dude is big and knocks stuff over. Yep. I don't know. Could be interesting. And then I lost my last thought on Kraven. I was going to ask you another question.
Oh, yeah. Maybe while you're thinking about it. I think, I'm really encouraged by it. I mean, I did not even see Morbius yet because of how bad reviews it got. So I'm hoping this can stand on its own. And they've got some good actors. I didn't. The guy allegedly playing Foreigner, according to the review I was reading, he comes from the small screen and he is a fantastic up-and-coming actor. So they said the casting on this is really well done. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to it. When does it drop? Do we know?
October 6th, 2023 is the
release. So this year. Okay, great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, Joe. We'll have to come go see soon. It.
Yeah. And then we'll read Kraven's Last Hunt.
Yes. So, that'll be a good lead in. Yeah.
Yeah. So with that in mind, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will be talking about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Sweet beef. Now it's a party.
Stop what you're doing and stop Spider-Man. Miles! Miles Morales! He's entering Sector 4!
Do I, have web on my face? What's the deal?
Miles! Wait, he's right there! He's right there! Turn around!
I don't see anything, boss.
Let me guess. He died?
All right. So welcome back. We're talking Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Well, let's start with the original Into the Spider-Verse, like real quick. I mean, what were your thoughts on that movie, Mark?
I think it came out before all of the multiverse timeline stuff. If I remember,
there's a lot of multiverse stuff going on. It was early. It was early in the multiverse craze.
But regardless, I just remember it was at the time original. The visuals are just stunning. I mean, the same with this comic or this movie. But I really liked how they celebrated Miles Morales as Spider-Man in there. And then they brought in all the other key characters, even Spider-Ham. You know, right. so it was, you know, noir Spider-Man with Nick Cage. I mean, it is just so enjoyable, and it just brings you in emotionally. I mean, it had a Pixar-esque story in my mind. Like, yeah. It brings you in early. It's really heartfelt. It's about family and, you know, hanging out with your friends and coping with change. And I can't say enough about it, Joe, in the first or the second one, but the first movie, that's what I got out of it. How about you?
It took everything I loved about Spider-Man. I think I saw it in the theater, maybe a preview, and I either texted you or called you. And I was like, that was the most like reading a comic I've ever had when watching a movie in so many amazing ways. The visual style, the humor, the tone. It was something that I had never seen before. And I was like, this may be the best Spider-Man movie I've ever seen. I mean, it was that was my immediate reaction. If I think about it, there's probably other Spider-Man movies I'd put up there with it, but it was just the novelty, the sheer drive, the energy, just, it was incredible. And so I was so excited to see Across the Spider-Verse. To me, it's like taking too long for the,
I don't think it's hyperbole. I remember where I was when I watched it, and the last movie with that type of visuals and story was The Matrix.
Yeah.
Like, which is like 20 years ago. So I'm with you. You're like, what did I just watch? Like, that was awesome.
They invented a whole new way to visually tell a story. And the way they handled the multiverse was cool. And the way that they introduced each character. So each character got to breathe a little bit, you know, as they introduced each one, and they all had their own mini arcs a little bit. So I don't know. I thought it was one of the best movies ever. So I was so excited for this. And this movie opens with a really awesome action sequence where you're getting to see some more spider people. You get the introduction of Jessica Drew, right? Is that who she is? She's Jess Drew, right? Spider-Woman.
Yeah. Spider-Woman. Yep.
And you get this
Spider-Woman.
Spider-Woman. Right.
Pregnant.
And you get it's right off the bat, you don't start with Miles, which I thought was incredible. I'm like, what a way to start a movie. It's like everybody's here to see Spider-Man, and you start with Gwen and what's going on with her and her life. And then you get the whole the battle with the Vulture, which was the Renaissance version of the Vulture, which was another visual style.
Yeah. I mean, it was Leonardo da Vinci-esque. I mean, like you said, it pulled you right in, and you're like, okay, they're trying to push the boundaries of the first movie, what made it awesome. And I think they successfully did that. And right out of the get-go, because they needed to show you, hey, if the threat is going to be Spider-Gwen, we need to pull you in storytelling-wise with Spider-Gwen and what she's doing and what she's dealing with.
Which I read some Spider-Gwen comics. I didn't at first when they first came out, because I thought it was a bit of a gimmick. I was like, okay, I get it. You know, in the comics, and the Spider-Gwen comics predate the movie by quite a bit. Yeah. Because they quickly got into Spider-Gwen and then Gwenpool and then Gwen's in different universes, which was interesting in the comics. But like I said, I thought it was a gimmick. And then when I finally went back and read some, I was like, this is actually also a pretty incredibly complex character. The way that they tweak the Spider-Man origin to be Spider-Man kind of always loses somebody along the way. And mm-hmm. she loses Peter Parker because Peter right. Parker turns himself into the Lizard. And I'm like, this is like actually a really cool storytelling twist, because usually it's usually Peter loses Gwen. And so this is Gwen losing Peter, which really triggers her and changes her life. And then because her father sees this happen, he's chasing Gwen, which is, he was always after Spider-Man in the comics, except now it's his own daughter.
Right, right. And the that's why I think I liked What If so much in the comics and the MCU, because I love the sliding doors thing of like, how do you pull on those threads? And to me, it tells you the story of, in any hero or any journey of anybody, it's like bad stuff happens to people, and it's how you deal with it. And so Gwen having that happen to her, like, you're still processing it as you're watching the movie, right, Joe? Because you're just like, whoa, like, that's deep stuff. And when you know about Spider-Man and his, how they've told that story over and over again with losing Gwen and how he loses her, they're introducing you to this whole new thing that you're familiar with. And does that make sense? Like, it's different, but it's familiar.
It's when we moved from Omaha to Ohio and our kids were so nervous about it, that was what I would tell them. I was like, it's the same, but different. It's the same, but different. Right. And so as soon as we got to Ohio, we started picking out things that were the same. Oh, that's kind of the same. That's kind of the same. That may not be Baker's, but it's Kroger, and they're owned, and they kind of look the same inside, don't they? And so it's like picking out the things that it's different and unique, and you're having a different experience, but the things that are the same keep you grounded in a different way.
Right, right, right. Yep. So I liked how it started. It started really well. Yep.
And you get to hear her background, and she is a fully fleshed out character. She's in a rock band, which is, did you catch the name of their band?
Yes, but I chuckled, but then I forgot what is it?
And it is in the comic, the Mary Janes.
That's right. That's so great.
So, I mean, it's cool because you can pull out little Easter eggs. And even if you haven't read the Spider-Gwen comic, it's still kind of a funny joke, even if you don't know that that's accurate to the comic, which I love. But this is where they have the big battle. And I really thought that Vulture was super clever they did. The one thing that amazed me in this movie was the visual styles they get. Like, each character sort of got a unique visual style that represented the universe they were from, which we'll get into. But this is where she meets Miguel O'Hara, Spider-Man 2099.
Yep.
Now, you've heard, right, that there's multiple versions of the movie in theaters. Have you heard this?
I did hear that. Yeah.
And one of the things they said is not every movie has the reveal of Miguel O'Hara as a vampire. Did you get that in your screening? Because where he's battling the Vulture, there's a moment where they're battling and he rips off the mask and it's in shadow and silhouette, but you can see giant fangs he's fighting back.
Okay, I did see that. Yes. My version had that.
Which, I don't know if that's part of his character or not, that he's part vampire or just he's crazy spider dude. Yeah. But you get a lot about those characters right away and about the spider teams that they're assembling from across the different spider verses. And of course, they don't want Gwen to be in, but she proves herself worthy in this battle, which was really cool. I thought, and that battle to me seemed to go on for like 20 minutes, but also like be over before you knew it, because it was so intricate and so much going on, but so fast paced. Is awesome.
You're talking about the Vulture battle, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wasn't even keeping track, to your point, of that, what was actually happening, because I was the visuals of the Renaissance Vulture to me. I was just catching all those things, and visually my senses were like stimulated on the visual, but I wasn't really paying attention, like olfactory, like what was going on.
Right. Like what? Yeah, it's definitely a movie that I'm sure will hold up under repeated viewings because there's so much you can peel back there.
Yep.
After that, though, then you finally get back to what's going on with Miles. Miles is getting ready to, he's going from high school into college, right?
Yes.
Is that it? They're doing his college prep. And then you get a lot with his family again, which I so enjoy their family.
He's still in high school, but he's prepping for college, I think is what you mean. Yeah.
Right. They're meeting with people. And then his battle with the spot gets in the way.
That is one of my all time favorite oddball villains in the comic book. So I didn't know he was in it. And then when I saw it, I was just like, oh my gosh. And who, I think I was watching it with my son and wife, and they're like, what are you giggling about? I'm like, I love Spot. He's great.
I didn't know. That's what I was going to ask you is like, so you had some history with that character and that.
I did. Yeah. I've got the first appearance of him in Amazing Spider-Man. I forgot the number, but I still have it. So I'm like, I should probably check to see what it's worth now. But yeah.
You should check it out. Speaking, I want to get a sidebar for a second. I did pick up a comic while I was out of town for work. Last week I went to a comic book shop and I always go dig through the back bins. And I finally got myself a copy of Amazing Spider-Man number 36, which is first appearance of, do you know?
Is it Green Goblin?
Nope. First appearance of when they use the word thwip when he's shooting his webs.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to guess, maybe this is real time, Joe. I'm going to guess I think the first appearance of Spot, I'm going to say is Spectacular Spider-Man 101. No, 99. That's what I'm going to guess.
Okay. Well, we'll look it up, or you can look it up here as we recap, because you get then back to Miles and he's getting ready for this crazy, the Spot character who's voiced by Neil Patrick Harris, right?
Yep.
I believe. Yeah. Yep. And I didn't know much about, I didn't remember the Spot. I probably have read a comic or two with the Spot in it, but he's not memorable in the comics. It's not like
he's not.
It's not like he's got hundreds of issues where he's battling Spider-Man. So it's so awesome to see him like not knowing how his powers work.
Yeah.
Not only not knowing how his powers work, but literally being called villain of the week. But like it's like no, I'm a nemesis. I don't know who you are, dude.
And it is, Joe. I was close. Spectacular Spider-Man 97. Ooh, I was off by two.
You were only off by two. That was very close.
Yeah. And it was the first and only appearance.
Really?
Yes. So he's one comic.
Truly.
It was villain of the week. Like that was the running joke when he said it. It had a meta meaning to me. I'm like, yeah, he literally was a villain of the week.
One issue in the entire 70 years of Spider-Man.
Yes. One issue he got.
And I like the way they tied back his origin, though, to the prior movie.
Right.
Was crazy in that, I don't know
the particle accelerator, whatever. He's a scientist and he gets imbued with these powers that he thinks is a curse, right? Because he loses his sense of self. Yeah.
Because he's just a basically white bodysuit with black splotches on it.
Right. That allow him to teleport, basically. But he's still figuring that out with his villain of the week moniker.
Right. And so at this point in the movie, he's really not all that, like he's trying to rob an ATM. He's like just trying to get some cash out of it that doesn't belong to him.
Right. I think people that are listening, I'm still doing this in real time. I think he was created in 97. I think his appearance is in 98, if that makes sense. So I think he's technically in two, but still, it's like such an obscure villain. It's like they really had to do their research to figure out who should they bring in Spot. They're like, well, they need somebody that has some multi-dimensional properties, right? So that's how they were able to pull it in. So it was very well done.
So you get fantastic, like it's like Fantastic Four 48, first appearance of Galactus, cameo only. 49, right. Full appearance, first full appearance of Galactus. Similar with the Spot.
Yes, exactly. Different, slightly different villains, but
slightly different impact on the MCU over time.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get that bit and you get, you know, I, for one, do really enjoy the family stuff with Miles. His mom and dad are just cracking me up all the time. And then the moment everyone's waiting for is the reunion of Miles and Gwen, and she shows up. She's like hanging out with him. Dude, hey, Miles, I'm here to see you. He's grounded. He got grounded for, you know, what was it? He was late to his dad's party.
Yes. He got promoted, I think his dad did. And so he was late. This is that's the first half or quarter of the movie. Like you said, it's him struggling with Miles Morales and being a teenager and missing Gwen, who just left, and he misses her and he's drawing her and all this stuff and trying to save his neighborhood. And he just struggles with it. So that's the thread that you can go across every Spider-Man. He's this flawed hero that has troubles at school, trouble at home, and he's afraid to tell them because if they know, it'll hurt him. And you're right. That culminates in that I think it's a promotion party where he.
Yeah. And I mean, and they give good reason for it. Even in the last movie, usually there's some reason he can't tell people he's Spider-Man, and it's, you know, with his dad, it's, you know, Spider-Man for a long time was viewed as a, like in the original, it was like Spider-Man was a menace. He couldn't tell Aunt May because poor Aunt May might have the vapors if she finds out Peter is, you know, she's fragile and it's all over. Spider-Man menaced. And his aunt thinks it's, and here it's like, it's different, but it's cool. It's at first, you think it's in the last movie, his dad thinks he killed the Prowler, which is his brother. But what it actually is his dad knows he's a hero and he has not told him. And so now keeping up with the lie so that you don't have to admit to your dad that you've been lying to him for a while.
Right.
And it's keeping up the ruse that he doesn't, and that's catching up with him, and that there's something going on. He knows he can't keep the home life and the Spider-Man life and all those threads together. And he's like, Gwen's the only one who would get this or the other Spider-Men. And they're not here until she shows up.
Right.
Which is a really cool scene. And they get together and he's like, she's
but here. Even she is here. She's there for other reasons.
Right.
Which so she doesn't tell him not at first. Telling him, she doesn't tell him at first. So there's, he's already fragile on this. And so he's got the only person he trusts isn't being trusting to him.
Right. Just kind of, it's interesting.
Yeah. It's pretty so deep stuff. Yeah.
I think this might be a good place to take a quick break, because this is where then the movie kicks into high gear, is like, you've got all the setup and then you get the whole now Spider-Verse. So we're going to take a quick break and we will be right back.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Wow. That sounds terrible when you say it out loud.
And me, it's,
we're the same. In the important ways, you know?
In every other universe, Gwen Stacy falls for Spider-Man. And in every other universe, it doesn't end well.
Well, it's the first time for everything, right?
So that's the moment that we were just talking about, right? Miles,
yep, that's right.
Gwen together, and she lets him know, I'm seeing the multiverse. And number one, he's a bit jealous and a bit, not jealous in a bad way, but he's like, that's cool. I need to do that too. And she's like, you can't though. Because she knows she had such a hard time getting in. She's there under false pretenses. Maybe he'll find out. She's not really here to see me, because they've told her you can't go see him. And you find that out later. So like, she's been strictly told this guy's no good.
Right. It's not gonna... Right. You can't see him, but they've got to stop Spot because there's a bigger threat happening. So she volunteers for it. And that's all unknown to Miles at the time. Like, he's getting FOMO. Like you said, he's missing out and he wants to be a part of it, but she's like, you can't be a part of it. So then it just creates a rift between them.
And so this moment between them that clip is like the springboard into the rest of the movie, which is the theme of, it happens this way in every other universe. And he's like, maybe it doesn't have to. Which is why they don't want him around in the first place. But also, while they're having that moment is when the Spot gets away.
Right.
And the spot becomes more powerful than you could ever imagine.
Yep.
Strike me down and I will become more powerful than you could possibly. So the spot gets super powerful and able to go across all kinds of areas of the multiverse. And again, Jess Drew's got to show up and she's like, what did you do here? Like, Gwen has screwed up. She's not completely honest with them either. And then blam, into the movie. And you got Miles across the Spider-Verse finally.
You do. Yeah. He finds his way. He spiders his way in there.
Right. And so I think it's great that they give him, what do they give him? A little temporary pass. Like, they don't give him a full pass.
Yeah. Because they think, because I'm a little fuzzy on this. Maybe you can help me. They do that because does he sneak his way in completely and they want his help, or does he get his way in and they didn't really want him in there at all and they're trying to figure, I can't remember.
He sneaks in and I don't think they wanted him in there, but like when you travel across, they established that when you're traveling across the multiverse, you'll glitch unless you have like one of these bands on. And so they give him one that's only good for one day. Everybody else has a permanent band.
That's right.
To be able to
day pass.
Yep. Right. So they won't glitch. And you get to start to meet some of the other Spider-Mans, because actually you're right. He does spider his way in because he's invisible at first. Remember, his power is invisibility.
Yep.
And I forgot. Yep. He goes and sort of spies on them in Mumbatan with Spider-Man. Yes. India, who's a cool character. I had never read, you know, I know that that's a thing, yeah, in the comics. Right. He's got his own comic series that just had issue number one come out not too long ago. But that's your first other big spider character, which is Spider-Man India, who I think also has a cool origin too. They all do.
They all do. Yeah. Yeah. It was really good. They played him well. And then they reintroduce a couple of the other classics in there, including Spider-Punk. But right. They bring Spider-Woman in there and a few others. So, yep.
Right. And so there's a piece there though that gets important with the Spider-Man India, which goes back to the whole thing, which is spots there, stuff's going bad. And there's a moment where it's like, are you going to save his girlfriend's father, the captain? Or are you going to save, who are you going to save here? And it's a classic Spider-Man moment. Which yep. one are you going to save? And he's determined to save both of them, even though Gwen knows that he can't. He's not that he can't, but he's not supposed to, because this introduces the quote canon events, the events that happen in every Spider-Verse, which is not everyone can live. You got to choose which one's going to live. And in the, just like in the comics with Gwen Stacy and the police captain, but Miles breaks it.
Right. Pain and loss. You're right, Joe. Pain and loss is a background to every Spider-Man. And they're like, no, you have to have that happen. You have to have a horrible loss of somebody you love. And that pain drives you to be Spider-Man.
Right. And so
he doesn't want to accept. Miles does not want to accept that fate.
Right. And so in Mumbatan, when it's Spider-Man India and that choice happens, Miles prevents this from happening, which triggers a giant canon event. And they tell him, you are literally destroying the fabric of the universe by having done that.
Right. And right.
That's why Miguel's like, I told you I didn't want this guy around.
Yep.
So what did you think of the thought of there being canon events that have to, like, literally have to happen in the Spider-Verse? Otherwise the web starts untangling.
Yeah, I think I'm good with that. I think that's a good way to up the stakes of tying canon events, like losing Uncle Ben, which they make fun of in your intro there of, let me guess, he died. Ah! So I think, yeah, tying it into that to show the stakes are high was a necessary plot point, but I thought it was also well done tied to Spider-Man and who he is.
Yeah.
He loses somebody and, you know, great power, great responsibility, and it drives him forever. And that's what they're saying, which we can talk about later, but it becomes so woven into the fabric, the other spider people are willing to do anything to save those events. And it's like, how far should you really go? Like, should you really go that far? And that's what they talk about in the second half of the movie. But yeah, they're going to take it at any point, because they just think that you have to do these things.
And that's the triggering event of a lot of this stuff. And that is going to springboard, you know, into the next movie. Is Miles struggling with this concept, and Miguel comes off as kind of a bad guy, that he's like so dead set against all of this stuff, until you hear Miguel's story, which is he replaced the deceased version of himself, and all of a sudden that whole universe collapsed, and he's like, he's driven, he's kind of a jerk about it, but he's like, I can't let this happen again. And that's why he's pulled together all these different versions of spider people. And so he's going to try and stop Miles, and Miles is refusing to be stopped, because he realizes, he's like, oh my gosh, the spot's going to go after my dad. And if there's a thing called a canon event where the police chief captain has to die, my dad just got promoted to captain. And they're like, Miles, you can't stop this.
Right.
Including I'm glad they reintroduced Peter B. Parker.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. They brought him back. And then you referenced it too. One of the other characters you meet along the way is Spider Punk, who, what did you think of Spider Punk? I didn't know much about the character. I knew of the character when I was at WonderCon. There's a dude cosplaying as Spider Punk. I thought it was a cool visual.
I from the comics and stuff, I did not know him very well. One quick point you made that I want to drive on, which is they weren't saying you can't do it. They're like, you shouldn't save him. I mean, he probably could save him, but they're like, no, you're not supposed to save him. And it's like, how do you tell somebody that you have the ability and the means to save your dad, but you shouldn't? It's like, that's what they're telling him, right? That's a horrible thing to say to somebody. Of like, yeah, you can save him, but you're not supposed to.
Right.
And of course he does his thing, and he's like, no, that's not going to happen.
Well, and it makes me wonder, like, if he hadn't been exposed to the entire multiverse and to this whole thing, would it have happened? Like, now he's got different knowledge and different skills that maybe he wouldn't have been able to prevent it in the past. Like, you're right. They're not telling him you're not able to physically. They're saying you can't, in that it's dangerous to the universe. But maybe if he hadn't gotten involved in the multiverse to begin with and exposed to all of this stuff, it would have happened and he wouldn't have prevented it.
Or I was going to take it a little angle, is it wouldn't have ever happened. Like, this was all supposed to happen the way it's supposed to, because Spot wouldn't have become more powerful if him and Spider-Gwen weren't a thing.
Right. Like,
he would have been caught and it would have gone away. And so this all happened because it was supposed to happen. I get it. It's a movie and everything, but you're right. It's a very interesting thing to think about around sliding doors. Like, what if this, what if that, like, would he have known it already? And the fact is, he knows it and he's not going to stop, and he'll do whatever he can to prevent it, even if it's taking on the entire Spider-Band. It's going to catch on.
So you do get Spider-Punk, who I actually think is a really interesting character, and is very cool the way he's animated in the movie.
Yes. I love it when they're like, another great visual. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you're cooler without the mask on. Is that possible? But also, true to his nature, is like, don't let them tell you what to do, dude. Just go do it.
Right.
That's the anarchy total ethos of the punk movement. You get Peter B. Parker coming back, which I was glad to see. Yep. Mayday Parker, which is awesome. Because are you familiar with Mayday in the comics?
No, I'm not.
Oh, remember when Spider-Girl was a comic series in the 90s? That's Mayday. Yeah. So it's Peter B. Parker's daughter becomes Spider-Girl, and you can see her as a little baby now, like crawling on ceilings.
Yeah, like that was great. He's got him in the little, you know, baby carrier thing, and he's web-slinging around and teaching her stuff. Yeah.
And I don't remember. I don't think her name is actually Mayday. I think that's her nickname. He just named her after Aunt May. Her name is May Parker, and everybody calls her Mayday because of her daredevil nature.
Right.
Which is cool. Right. I'm glad that they introduced that. And then I was going to ask, there's like hundreds and hundreds of other spider variants. Which were the ones that stood out to you? Which were your favorite ones?
I think there was, gosh, it was essentially
sensory. Which one do you want to see a movie of?
There was a variant of like, well, I still love the one from the original, which is the, I call it the Japanese one, where it's a little girl inside the machine of Spider-Man. That's uh-huh. one of the more cute ones and memorable ones. But man, I don't know. What about you? That'd be probably my most memorable one.
That was the hardest thing, is to be like watching in the background for all the little spider. My favorite spider cameo is Baghead Spider-Man, which I love.
Oh, yeah. The Fantastic Four. Yeah.
Which is from Web of Spider-Man number one. Right when he goes to the Fantastic Four and gets his black suit removed, and it's an alien symbiote, and they're like, "You can't go home in your underwear." And they give him a Fantastic Four costume and a bag with eye holes cut out to walk home in.
so he's got a Fantastic Four outfit with a bag over his head. I've got some sleeping pants that have that Spider-Man on me. I'm like, that's my favorite one. And then the Spider-Man games for PlayStation, it's a variant of a costume. Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
I think the one that would be interesting to like explore the universe more would be the spider cowboy who's got a spider horse also. Because it was a cowboy and a horse, and they both were spider powered.
Yeah,
weird. I'd like to see more of that. That was fun though. But those were, I mean, that's, again, it's like I think about that, and that sequence seems so long, and it's not much quote happens. There's really cool action, but there's so much detail that it seems like you're like, This, it's all, it's all crammed in there. It's great. So at this point, then they're like, well, Miles is apparently going to try and go home and save his dad. And we can't let that happen. All the Spider-Men, get him.
Right. Big battle ensues. Very visually, you know, fantastic, like the whole movie, but yes. Yep.
But then he gets away. And
he finds a way to get back home.
He gets back home, right?
Yep.
And he takes the spider, because it's the spider that bit him on Earth 42. It's like, I'm going to use that and get back to my home universe.
And right before that, Joe, this is a good plot point. That's when Miguel tells him why you can't be part of the spider team. Because he himself was a mistake. They're like, you were bit by a spider from another universe.
Right.
So you're not even supposed to be this person, which just completely messes with him mentally at that point. Because he's already struggling with who he is. Now you're telling him you're not even supposed to be a Spider-Man.
Right. There's supposed to be a different Spider-Man on Earth, which
are on his away Earth. From.
Right. Which then, if you think back through Miles' head, maybe means his Uncle Aaron is still alive. Which means things turned out much differently if he had never become Spider-Man.
And Miguel is hammering this point home to him, but he doesn't. The drive of saving his dad overrules all that. And you're right. He finds a way back home.
Right. Well, except
we think at home.
Because the spider that bit him was not the Spider-Man, was not the spider from his own universe. He
prevented another universe from being a Spider-Man.
Right. He prevented that universe from having Spider-Man, and he gets there, and it's no bueno there. His dad's already dead there.
Yep.
But Uncle Aaron is still alive.
Yes. And what's interesting about the visuals, Joe, I would say my wife figures things out in movies way before me.
Yeah.
When he went home and they see his mom, I immediately knew because her eyes were different. Her eye, and it was so visually in your face about her eye color. I want to say they were brown in like his real mom and blue in this one or vice versa, but the blue was so bright. I was like, wait a minute, that's a different person. So I figured it out before the plot twist.
That's cool.
Because of the visuals. And it's just a testament to how, and I'm not saying that to brag. I'm just saying the movie was so visually stunning. I immediately picked up on that. I'm like, wait a minute, her eyes are different. Like, why is that? I just wanted to make that point.
That's the best kind of movie, though, is where they'll give you hints that if you're observant, you'll get, and you'll be like, oh man, I picked up the crumbs. So that's cool that you saw that. I think in my theater, I was a different version and I didn't get to see that.
That's right.
I would have figured it out too, but that.
So to your point, not only is Aaron, his uncle, still alive. Go ahead and give the big reveal at the end.
Well, I'll get back to the well, yeah. So we'll do that, which is Miles is a bad guy in this universe.
Yes.
And he has captured Miles here. And then to be continued.
Yes.
How did you feel when that hit?
Well, so I was shocked. I was gobsmacked because Joe, I didn't know there was going to be another movie. I didn't do any research on it, which I didn't want to. I wanted to go in fresh.
Right.
And I only watched a little bit of a trailer, but I wanted to just go in and enjoy it. And when it happened, I was like, cliffhanger feels, because I didn't know there was going to be a sequel. So I was, like I said, I was gobsmacked. I was like, what?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I had to think on it for a while because I was the same as you. I did not want to go into spoilers. I think I had heard that there was going to be another movie, but it's not like you referenced The Matrix earlier. When the second Matrix came out, it was everywhere. They're like, we're filming two Matrix movies. They're continuous. They're going to be released 6 months apart. Like, they let everybody know this is two movies split in half. And I don't think anybody, nothing that I read, led me to believe this was a two-part movie where it was going to literally end with a cliffhanger. Yep. Like The Matrix did. So another Matrix reference. And it was, I was irritated at first because I was like, you can't just do that. You can't do that. In that, because you can have sequels, trilogies, stuff like that. And I equated it to, when I watched it, Empire Strikes Back. Empire Strikes Back does end. The story's not over, but every character's arc came to a close to spring into the next movie. Sure, Han Solo had been frozen in ice, but it didn't end like literally in the middle of the action. It didn't end on Cloud City where they're lowering Han Solo into it. It's like, and then like, to be continued. Like, they closed it all off. So I was irritated by that because I was like, we didn't get any closure, but we do get closure with Gwen and her dad because she gets back to her home universe her story completes because now she's able to tell her dad that she is Spider-Gwen. He's actually no longer in danger because he's quit the police force. So he's not captain. He's not the police captain anymore.
Yep. So Joe, if you think about it, this is where, remember how the movie started with Spider-Gwen. So that arc, you're right, closed for her, but you still have the Miles thing going on. And I guess it's going to come out in March, which is it's like the closest ever a sequel and its counterpart are going to come out together. The Spider-Verse Part 2 is going to come out March of next year.
Fingers crossed. I'm hearing more problems with how much those animators are having to work to finish some of this stuff.
But yeah, it's probably right. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. It did make you a little irritated, but then you got to think about what that story was about for that movie. And it was Spider-Gwen.
Yeah. So, let's take a break. Let's talk about a couple comics, and then we'll close off with some comics talk, and then we'll talk about our favorite moments or our favorite things from across the Spider-Verse when we get back.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast, so be prepared for purple lightning mixed with the afternoon appearance of death clouds.
I think on them often, those heroes of the Manifold Territories, those guardians of the galaxy. How they stood for the defenseless, gave voice to the voiceless. How they kept the fire of civilization lit against the coming of Groot Space. But then, all these years later, I can't help but consider that no matter how much a man might try, a fire only ends one way.
I like that they do trailers now for comic books because it's kind of cool to hear Guardians of the Galaxy. So this they're on issue 3 at this point. I just read issue 3, but I thought we just finished Guardians of the Galaxy volume 3, the movie, and both liked it a lot. And I thought, hey, I wonder what's going on with Guardians of the Galaxy in comics now. And let me ask Mark to read one with me and see what we think. It's actually called Guardians of the Galaxy in the Massacre at Galilee 4. Written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Kev Walker. And this, it's what's happening? If you want to know, this is what's going on with Guardians of the Galaxy right now in the Marvel Comics universe, which is outer space, almost like an outer space Western is how I'd describe it, Mark.
I would agree. Yep. Right. I would add a twist that you would love, Joe. I wrote down Borderlands.
I thought about that today when I reread it. I was like, except for all the crass humor.
But yeah,
I thought about that. It starts with, like you hear in the trailer, these manifold territories, and Star-Lord just shows up and he's got his cowboy hat down all over his mask and his own eyes cracked.
Yep. Yep. Very good. Yeah. I love the art in it. It was really good.
It was, and it's like the Guardians show up and they're all here. And it, or did you see the TV show Firefly? It reminded me of Firefly too.
I did. It's been a while, but yeah, I wrote down classic Guardian of the Galaxy, enter and exit. They're coming in to save. They leave. They don't quite win everything because they lose some people, but a lot of good energy in the first comic. I think I'm gonna have to read the other ones, Joe.
It is, and it's interesting because I mean, it's not quite like the movies. We talked about the movie, and the movie was like, in the end, everything kind of worked out, at least for the Guardians.
Right.
Yep. I guess if you think Volume 3, the whole planet did get destroyed, but they didn't stop him from blowing up the whole planet that he created, the High Evolutionary. But
right,
similar. You're right. Yeah. They roll into town. There's a planetary threat on its way. Everybody
wipe out the civilization that already got wiped out elsewhere. So they're there to save a whole civilization, and yeah, they successfully save most of them.
Most of them. I think at one point Peter says, for the Guardians, half a win is still a win.
Right. Yeah, he did. He said that. That was great. Which made me think, well, a couple things. What the heck is Groot Fall? And second, where's Rocket?
Where is Rocket? That's a good question.
Yeah.
But that was good. It's not, I mean, not to spoil the first issue, but this is like a big thing that's going on right now. This is the thread is, the planetary threat is Groot Fall. And there's just this giant flaming head of Groot coming towards the planet. And then when it hits there, starts entangling everything and absorbing
a Galactus type event. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Which is fun because they, in the way that they like said, this planet, the civilization had to move here because Galactus ate their last planet.
And then I know there's a Galactus reference in there. They have bad choice of housing, which made me think about it, Joe. What was your favorite Guardian moment of all the appearances in the MCU? I wanted to ask you about that because I wrote down mine real quick. We can burn through them pretty quickly. You want me to tell you mine?
Yeah, give me one at a time.
Okay, so mine, in no particular order, I've got Nebula. My favorite with her is the scene with herself in Endgame. Where they're talking about, you know, hey, you can become a different person, and then she has to kill herself. Well, shoot a version of herself because of that. I like that scene. That's my favorite with Nebula.
Yeah. See, it's a little hard for me to, you know, you texted me this morning and said, let's think about it. Recency bias is going to be hard. Like I so much with Volume 3 was so good. I love the scene where I guess the scene is the one where she, like, Gamora is like freaking out, the new Gamora.
Mm-hmm.
And you get this moment where she's like, and everyone thought I was the bad sister. Look, this is who she is. Why does everybody think I'm the bad one?
Right, right. The recency bias for me, but I don't think it's recent. I think my favorite Drax moment is Volume 3, showing him that he can be a good dad.
Yeah.
Like that was really heartwarming in that movie. So that was my favorite Drax moment.
That was pretty amazing. I think for me, it was the introduction to Drax. I didn't know much about the character, and what I knew of the character from comics seemed to be pretty boring. So in Volume 1, where he's like, nothing goes over my head, I would catch it. I am too fast. And just the introduction to that aspect of his character is like, oh, this is a character I can really get into because he's not who I thought he was.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. Star-Lord.
He's like, get her in. Get him in. Why would I pull my finger across their throat? Anyway,
he's great. Star-Lord, I get a lot of good moments there, but I think the Volume 2 with Ego, with his dad, you know, finally getting to meet his dad and then realizing he's a POS.
Yeah. right?
And he tells him he kills his mom. He's just like, what? So, yeah.
Right. For Star-Lord, for me, I would have to go back to the, again, these are all like such comedy pieces, but it's Endgame with him and Thor. And like, he's like, stop talking like me. I'm not talking like you. Why are you talking like me? And just his jealousy of Thor and how he's like Thor's so ripped and he's like looking at him and he's just like got this, his ego is hurt almost because there's a more ripped dude than him.
He's like, all right, I'm going to commit. I'm going to get a Voflex. And Mantis, this is where the comedic value and the warmness of helping Peter, it was the Christmas special.
Yeah.
Mantis, like the whole Mantis scenes and Christmas special I enjoyed.
I get it. Yeah. My favorite Mantis moment was, it actually was one of the things that made me cry in volume three, is where she's yelling at Nebula. She's like, stop pushing him. And she's like, she's defending Drax in a way that kind of hurts his feelings. Yes. She's like, he loves us. He makes us laugh. What's wrong with that? He's the only one of us who doesn't hate himself. And like that level of acumen shows mm-hmm. what power an empath can have. And her, like, because Nebula's badder than her, stronger than her, meaner than her all the time. And her standing mm-hmm. up for Drax, who she loves, almost she loves him because of his flaws, not despite his flaws. I love that.
Right. Right. No, I agree. That's really good. Gamora, it was Infinity War with her dad and her. The whole moment on to get the Soul Stone, that was probably one of my favorite Gamora moments.
Oh, wow. Her just getting chalked up to the cliff.
Well, not dying, but just her finally realizing she's like, you don't love anything.
Right.
And he's like, why are you crying? And he's like, you're crying because you can't get what you want. And he's like, no, I'm crying because I love you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to kill you. And it's like, what? That's so sick and wrong.
Right.
And her realization of that on her face was just really well done, I thought.
I thought it was well done too. I'd have to think of a good strong like Gamora moment where it's like her standing on her own. Because she wasn't as big a part because she got snapped and didn't come back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Or she really didn't doesn't get a story arc and she died, but she didn't really get the same
level of
attention in volume three. Yeah.
Yeah. She doesn't get the moments in the Avengers movies either. Because mm-hmm. she doesn't come back from the snap. They wind up getting her back in the heist. But it's not her. I don't know. I guess, gosh, that's hard to say what, you know.
Yeah.
Because she does. She goes from being like super mean to being in love with Peter to just being super mean again. And right. I don't know which Gamora I prefer.
The Groot. For me, it's not even close. It's the end scene in volume one.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
He's saving all of his friends. I mean, it's such a great scene. And you're just like, you know, you get all teary eyed and emotional because you actually hear him basically saying, I am Groot. But it's like he's saying, I love you guys. And he saves them.
Which one? At the end of one.
Volume one. Says, yeah, where he wraps around all of them. And he
says, we are Groot.
We are Groot. Thank you. Yeah.
No, there's not another Groot moment that's close. There's Groot moments that are funnier when he's baby Groot or teenage Groot. Oh, listen, look at the acorns on this one.
And then Rocket, again, because this volume three was about him, it was all of volume three for me, Rocket. But my favorite one moment, and you've referenced this before, is when he asked Quill to take that guy's leg in volume one. And he's like, I just wanted to, he's running around on one leg. He's like, it's when you realize what kind of a person Rocket is. He's just this sadistic weirdo that you can't help but laugh.
I'm gonna go way off the board, and it's because of an experience I had. Have you been to Avengers Campus at Disney?
No, I have not.
I got to go when I went to WonderCon, and I went on the Guardians of the Galaxy ride. The Guardians of the Galaxy ride is amazing. It's too short. They do a good job, like in the best theme parks, where as you're walking through the line, there's stuff to do. The story, if there is one, of the Guardians of the Galaxy ride is you're going through the collector stuff and you get to see, you got Cosmo and a thing, and you get to see all these artifacts as you're going through the line. And the collector has captured the Guardians of the Galaxy, and you're going to get to go see this infamous Guardians of the Galaxy, and they take you into the holding room where, you know, you're going to get on the ride. But there's the video that they're like, here's how this works, and you've been hand selected to be whatever. And then like Rocket pops up, and it's an animatronic Rocket that's running back and forth. And he's like, listen, we're going to get the Guardians out of here. He's like, and I need your help. And it's like, it's kind of cool because he's like sabotaging stuff. And so like the basic theme of the ride is Rocket is worked with you to sabotage the ride and the stuff to so the Guardians can escape. And it was so unexpected to me that like literally like 5 feet or 6 feet away from you, this little animatronic Rocket pops up and looks realistic and is running around. And he's like, we're going to get him out of here.
That's pretty cool.
In the same way that he's like thieving stuff and putting it together.
But I do, wrapping up, I am going to go back and read the other comics for Guardians, because they like, where's Rocket? What's Groot fall? How did that happen? I'm sure they'll dive into that. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool visual book too. I liked it a lot. I'm glad you liked it. And maybe when we finish up and figure out what Groot fall is, we can talk about that too.
Yeah.
So we'll take one quick break, and then we will be right back to wrap up our Across the Spider-Verse spider stuff.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. We're not done until one of us can't get up.
I don't know who that's going to be, but... So we talked today about Across the Spider-Verse, Mark. Any like 2 to 4 like favorite moments or things about the movie that we didn't talk about?
Well, for me personally, it was not knowing it was a cliffhanger. So I'm like, I think the movie's going to be done here. I was like, wait. Right. So it's rare that you can use the word gobsmacked. So I was gobsmacked. I was like, what?
Right.
So that moment was really good. And then I would say the end story arc to Spider-Gwen with his dad, that was very heartfelt. Him accepting her at the end of that. I really liked how they resolved her. Well, at least for the movie, I don't know if it's the whole series, but the story arc with her, those are my two favorite moments. Yeah.
I think the thing that hit me was realizing like it was in that last sequence with Spider-Gwen and her dad that it really made me reflect on the different visual styles of each Spider-Verse, because hers is very much this watercolor. And in that moment, you're seeing watercolors even drip down the screen as she's like with her dad. And I love that,
yes,
that universe and the way they visually make the watercolor stuff happen, because if you go back and look at any of the comics, that's really what their cover stuff looks like. Like that a lot. I like the spider. Like I said, I like the way that they started with her and pick that up. And I mean, I think that's what really stuck out to me more than the story this time. I'm going to have to go back and watch it again, because as we hit it, the story beats were pretty spare, but it more than made up for it in visual style. And I did love, I know we didn't talk much about the comic we read on Spider-Punk, but I really like that character. I'm looking forward to seeing more. Oh, and then yep, the reunion at the end, we didn't talk about all the old spider gangs back together to help Miles.
Yes.
Spider-Man
yes.
Noir. I forget the Japanese spider girl.
Yep. Yep.
Gwen.
Yep.
Peter Porker. The spectacular spider ham.
Spider ham. Yep. Yep. It was great. Yeah. I forgot about that point, because like you said, I need to go back and watch it for the plot, because I was watching the movie in the theater visually, and I wasn't keeping track with what was really going on plot wise because it was so visually stunning.
Right. I'm going to have to watch that again, but yeah, the cliffhanger, I didn't care for the one piece of it, but man, I am so excited for that spider crew to be reunited, including little baby Mayday Parker, yep, helping Miles.
Yep. And it did. It really got you jazzed for the sequel because of that.
Yeah. And I'm hearing that's the end. No more Sony Spider-Man, no more Miles Morales animated films once that one's done. So hopefully they'll touch back on the one Spider-Verse that seemed to be super important that they never got back to, which was the Lego Spider-Man universe at the very beginning.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
That's the first person that like Miguel calls about the spot.
That's right. That's right. Oh my gosh. That's so funny.
All right, Mark. Well, thanks for hopping on and recapping Spider-Man with me and reading Guardians of the Galaxy. And I'm really looking forward to what's next. Anything, any big movies coming out?
Well, I mean, you got the non-Marvel ones. I mean, you got Oppenheimer, which is the Nolan film. He's like forcing people to go to the theater to watch. And then Mission Impossible, Tom Cruise movie. That'll be good. But I'm looking forward to Kraven in the fall. I'm excited about that. I'm
looking forward to Kraven too. And it just occurred to me, I have not even watched a single episode of Secret Invasion yet. So I got to get caught up on that.
Okay. I like it so far. So far, so good. Yeah. Two episodes in. It's enjoyable. I mean, you have to let me know what you think, but yeah, I like it. Don't love it, but it's a high bar for me. So I really like it.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And we will chat with you sometime again soon.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic book you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter at Casual Comics Guy. At our blog, casualcomicsguide.com, or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.